gentlemen. Welcome back. Thank you so much for tuning in. This is Red Ice TV. My name is Henrik. It's awesome to have you here. Thank you for spending some of your time with us. Today we have Chris Cantwell back on the show from Radical Agenda. He was with us, I think it's actually a couple of years ago, last time he was with us, talking about some of his common sense extremism, some of his transformation, if you will, from the more libertarian side of things to the little bit more alt-right side of things. So welcome back, Chris. Good to have you here.
It's excellent to be here, Henrik. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. So how did the Washington, D.C. thing go? I was just looking at some of the footage again. It's like, you're looking fit, man. You're looking good. You were working out since we last saw you.
Yeah, you know, whenever I'm banned from Facebook, I just spend all my time in the gym. And since I'm always banned from Facebook, I just figured I'd get real big in the meanwhile.
There you go. Exactly. That's good. Lifting some weights, getting angry and mad. It's good. We need some aggression back into the picture, you know?
Yeah, at some point it occurred to me that things out there are not going to things seem to keep on getting worse, and it might help if one was in better physical shape. And so I got a gym membership. I loaded up one of the rooms in my apartment with exercise equipment, and I can't recommend it highly enough to everybody out there, especially the guys.
You feel better? Well, of course you do.
I feel 1,000 times better. It's like the best thing I ever did. Yeah.
Yep. That's right. Yeah, because let's talk about actually some of the kind of the main message from what I got from your speech. I really like the way you ended it. You were talking about this issue that it's like we are facing a clique of people who are trying to replace us. They're trying to get rid of us. And if we don't reach a point where we, start organizing, getting together and take care of this, we will be gone from that picture. And that was the base message that I got from your speech.
Yeah, essentially what I see with the American left is a group of people who are operating by the rules of warfare and espionage. And it seems to me that those of us on the right are attempting to operate by the rules of civil discourse. And in a conflict like that, that's bringing a knife to a gunfight. And that means we're going to lose 100% of the time. And since these people want to see our extinction, that, in my opinion, would be rather unwise. We either have to get it through our heads that we are in the midst of a ruthless conflict, or we're going to lose that conflict. And if we don't choose, then the communists will gladly make the decision on our behalf.
Yeah, that's right. And that's what we're facing here. It's an existential threat. And you know, people have been talking about this for a while now, but it's becoming more and more clear by the day that this is the issue, right? I mean, we have open hostility towards not only people that are a little bit more on the right, but just, yeah, I mean, let's be honest about it, primarily white people. That's the issue. They want to see us gone. They want to replace us. They want us out of the picture, and they'll do whatever they need to do. They'll use fancy, nice words. They'll use our own compassion against us. They'll use the good nature of white people to get rid of us, right?
Precisely. And that is exactly the tactic that is perpetually taken, is to use our own virtues as weaknesses. They take our kindness for weakness, literally, and that is being used to our destruction. And the only way that you can, in my opinion, that you can deal with that is to stop taking them as debate opponents, right? You see these people doing these things. There's not a discussion that you can have with them. There's not a negotiation that you can have with a person who says that whiteness is white supremacy and white supremacy must be eliminated, right? Somebody says that to a white person, I can't have a negotiation with you. There's no middle ground that we're going to reach in that discussion. And if you are going to operate according to the rules of warfare and espionage, if you're going to start a media campaign to say that the president of the United States is a puppet of the Russian government and drive people like James Hodgkinson to go pick up an SKS, you know, this is no longer a negotiation. We're not trying to figure out what the truth of the matter is. We're not trying to come to some kind of agreement. This is war.
So what do you think of the recent comments with out of CNN, Van Jones? I mean, when I look at someone like Van Jones, I just see a talking head who's kind of obeying orders. I don't know how much he believes of some of the stuff that he's saying, but obviously his comments are pretty damning, and it just confirms something we've known for a long time. His nothing burgers comment. Is this the nail in the coffin on CNN? What do you think is going on here?
Well, I don't think it's the nail in the coffin for CNN, but it's one of the holes in the hull of the ship, I hope, because, you know, Van Jones saying it's a nothing burger, the other producer saying that it was complete BS. Everybody knows that. Who's not just a CNN / MSNBC zombie viewer, right? I mean, anybody who's paying any attention, anybody who's watched James Comey testify in front of the United States House of Representatives knows that it's nothing. But so I don't think that it's going to be the nail in the coffin for CNN, because there's so many people who that's the only place that they get their information from is CNN and MSNBC. That's the only people they're catering to anymore. It's like it's like they're just trying to give the best product that they can give to their best customers, I guess, their dumbest viewers. They're trying to give them the most entertaining experience possible, and that's a fine product to sell. But that is not that does not a credible news organization make.
No, that's right, and they're really tanking right now. I think it's very important that we continue, of course, to point this kind of stuff out, that we're in a position where we keep hammering these boys, and we're seeing a new kind of structure actually arising out of this. And I'm not very surprised, to be honest. It's amazing that it's taken this long for this huge media conglomerates, and with all the backers they have and the sponsorships, and they're well tied in with the establishment and the network, the globalists, if you will. But it's good to see some progress on this front. We can finally begin to confirm some of the things we've known all along.
It is. It is good to see that there's some awareness going on there, right? I mean, if I'm watching cable news, I admittedly will usually watch Fox. I try to tune into MSNBC once in a while just to see how crazy they're getting. And I'm watching, every time I've attempted to turn on Rachel Maddow, within 30 seconds of it, she gets into, and we've got something new on the Russia conspiracy. And I'm like,
it's amazing.
Why is this lesbian drug addict having a seizure? I don't understand what her problem is. and that's the only thing that I can make of it, because I've been actually paying attention to the words that are being said by the officials. And it doesn't seem to me that there's any evidence of these things, but they want to start. It seems to me like they're just trying to spark an insurrection. It seems to me like they're trying to drive the dumbest people in America to violence. And it seems to be working out fantastically, frankly.
Yeah, exactly. And so an amazing amount of nothingness when it comes to the proof that they presented from all of this. I think it was The Intercept did a couple of compilations. They were talking about Maddow specifically. And it's like show after show after show. It's Russia, 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 Russia. And, you know, you have people like Adam Schiff and these descendant intelligence hearings on this stuff. And it's like, to me, when I listen to their arguments, it's like, Where's the proof of this stuff? It's just they're trying to create enough smoke for us to believe that there must be a fire here somewhere.
Yeah, and the thing is, what drives me crazy about leftist media is I would love to come and bring audio clips onto my show and say where they went wrong or something like this, right? But the problem is that they're not actually saying anything. What they're saying is Russian investigation. We don't know. I wonder what happened. Like, they're not, it's not like they're making up lies that you can contradict and prove most of the time. What they're doing is they're spinning a completely nonsensical narrative without ever having said anything at all. So it's not even like you can pick it apart. You have to listen to the entire show and the crime involved, the act that you're trying to detect is that they haven't said anything. And so to try to bring out little sound bites of it, to try to get people on board in a soundbite world in which we live, is extraordinarily difficult to do.
Yeah, and it's tons of, like, allegedly and anonymous source said, and, this it might be, it could have been, most likely. You know, you see terms like that thrown around. It's like, get to the
exactly.
Fucking point. Where is it? Where is the proof, right?
Exactly. Or they'll take, like, Maxine Waters. They'll take a woman like Maxine Waters who really, I don't understand. You know, she is the picture of why democracy doesn't work, this woman. And she's a member of the United States House of Representatives, who is always going on and crying about impeachment because she is just so certain that Donald Trump is a puppet of the Kremlin. Now, she's completely nuts, but like the media will just go and take her and say, well, this member of the House of Representatives said this, so we're going to talk about it for the next hour and a half. Right.
Yeah.
And all that the TV people, all the talking heads on the television are doing is talking about the words of the member of the House of Representatives, thereby spreading what that member is saying, even though there's no merit to it whatsoever.
It's just amazing that it's gone this far. But it seems to be enough, as I said, enough smoke for people to be truly, truly concerned about this and truly just feeling that this is a dangerous issue and America has to do something about this. What do we do? How far do you think it'll go? I mean, are these nutballs going to actually try to push a war with Russia? Where is this going to end?
I'm concerned about this. You know, I was actually recently a guest on a show called American Exodus Americanus, and they brought up something that I had failed to notice, that it seemed like the whoever funnels money into leftist causes seemed to have stopped funneling money to Black Lives Matter after the Dallas shooting where the guys went and killed, shot at the cops, the AR or whatever. It seems to be like there are limits, perhaps, that once that when things reach a certain level, perhaps they are capable of backing down. But, you know, I have always known, you know, for many years, I understood, just like everyone right of Lindsey Graham understands, that there's a severe left-wing bias in the media. I just, until Trump won the primary and later after he became president, I had no idea the depths to which they would sink in their dishonesty to push their agenda. I look at what's going on now, and I really get scared. You get this James Hodgkinson guy who went there with an SKS to go start shooting at members of the House of Representatives of the Freedom Caucus, right? So he wasn't just trying to shift the balance of power in a partisan fashion. He went there to kill the most conservative members of the Republican Party, which wouldn't just shift power in favor of the Democrats. It would cuck the Republican Party ideologically, because whoever would replace a guy like Steve Scalise or whatever, yeah, he might be a Republican, but he's probably not going to be as conservative, right?
Yeah.
So that was a targeted attack that would have dramatically shifted the balance of power in the United States federal government, and this is being driven by this kind of stuff. And the idea that I am very concerned that we haven't seen the last of it, and if they're not going to stop, that means they expect it to continue, right?
Yeah.
The Huffington Post, and right before this James Hodgkinson guy went off, they published a piece saying that Donald Trump should be executed. And then after this shooting happened, they finally retracted the piece. You know, so these people know what they're doing. They know the type of propaganda that they're spewing is designed to incite violence. They're continuing to do it, and if they don't stop, then it's only a matter of time before there has to be a retaliation, right?
Yeah. They'll never take responsibility. Never. They never even discussed this. I mean, I heard people from the Atlantic sitting in a synagogue talking about how evil the alt-right was, comparing the alt-right to ISIS. I don't know if you caught any of this. Hilarious. It's like, listen, you guys are the biggest instigator of violence if there ever were any. I mean, look at how they ramped up Black Lives Matter and all this stuff, right? I mean, tons of violence. They have blood on their hands, and they just refuse to recognize that.
You know, the thing I think about it is that, yes, of course. I mean, that's everything they do, right? I mean, the left is eternally trying to expand the role of government into our lives and to, do away with self-defense laws and make a friendlier environment for criminals. I mean, everything that they do is an advocacy or promotion of violence, and I'm not necessarily shocked by that. What they do, when they say that we are violent, we are ISIS, we are, you know, they're trying to make the Tea Party out to be some kind of insurrectionist movement, whatever it is, you know, I honestly, sometimes I wonder if, I wonder if these people are smarter than we give them credit for, frankly, because I think that they're seeing things a couple of steps ahead. They have to know on some level that if you run around attacking people in the streets, depicting the assassination of the President of the United States, encouraging assassinations of congressional representatives, they have to know at some point that that is going to meet resistance. They have to know that that's going to happen. And frankly, we would all prefer for this all to be handled civilly, of course, I should say. But clearly, if leftists are going to continue violently and extra legally attacking the right, then eventually the right is going to attack the left. And I don't think it would be inaccurate to say that the brutality used by the right would exceed that of the left. And so if they want to compare us to ISIS in that sense, I can actually see why they would do it. And I wonder if that's what it is. You know, somebody a while back had produced a video about like the Spanish Revolution or something to this effect, right? And there's the communist uprising, and then there was a counter-revolution, and they came and they started killing people. It was like right-wing death squads came out and started, you know, dissecting Marxists, trying to find the biological origin of this mental illness. And, you know, it's horrific things that they did to the Marxists in Spain. And I'm like, okay, like, I can see why this happened, because it just became such an unmanageable problem that all you could do was remove these people from your society.
So do you think that they're trying to, like, create a scenario where they're trying to instigate people to react to their bullshit and nonsense, almost as a way, as a preemptive way of pulling us out of the woodwork, so to speak, and from that situation, they see that they might be able to go after us in a more radical way?
You know what I thought was funny? I watched a video by Ezra Levant of Rebel Media not so long ago where he was interviewing a Jewish guy in Sweden, and he asked the Jewish guy, you know, he said, I'm Jewish too, and I just wonder if our people, do we have like a suicide gene? We're always stupid. We don't know who our friends are, right? And I almost think that you could extrapolate that out from Jews to the left more generally, is that it seems to be like what they're doing is suicidal, right? It seems that they're trying to bring about the destruction of their own civilization, which is not going to turn out in their favor, right? And so I don't know if it's a self-destructive instinct, perhaps, causing them to behave this way.
Right, right. You have Hodgkinson's, that's one end of the spectrum, of course, but then they try to balance it out. You recall the guy up in Oregon there, right? Jeremy Christensen, it was a while ago, but he seemed to have been, I looked a little bit closer at him and some of his posts and stuff like that. He seemed to have been just a straight up nutball. He was like posting, the left could pull out whatever they want from him, right? They found some of the posts on Facebook where he's supposedly a white supremacist and all this stuff. But he had posted, stuff in support of Bernie Sanders, too. He was left-wing one day, he was right-wing the other. He's one of these projections that, like, whoever is out to catch a bad guy could take him as an example and prove, supposedly, due to some post he did 2 months ago, of who he was and what ideology had driven him to do this violence, right?
Well, and, you know, the other thing worth pointing out about Jeremy Christian is, to my understanding, his crime was that he decided to yell at some gals on a train or something to that effect, and that's not a nice thing to do, and I certainly wouldn't recommend it. They're charging this guy with a murder because when he said something nasty to some women, some guys came and attacked him, and he apparently killed one of the guys.
Yeah.
I don't think that guy should have done it. I can understand why people would want to intervene. I've come to the offense. I've also come to the defense of, you know, women in distress on the street as well. I can understand why those guys would intervene. But if they put their hands on him, you know, when he was just verbally yelling at them, then they were the aggressors. And this guy reacted violently in self-defense is kind of worth pointing out. Now, the fact that he's, you know, maybe a little bit unstable, had some different political ideas, can all feed into that, of course.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, they'll find these kinds of scenarios. They'll find these people that'll find these scenarios to try to prove that it's like, we should be more concerned with right-wing terrorism because that's been the biggest issue. Despite, I think I looked at a video today, in the wake of the of Ramadan, right? The they call it the bombathon. I think it was 1,700 people, 1,750 or something like that. The death toll so far in 2017, up to this point, with various Islamic terrorism around the world. Yet they're trying to gaslight us into believing that it's white supremacy and peaceful white people that's the bigger issue. I mean, these people are insane. They've lost it.
Well, they certainly do. But at the same time, like I said before, I sometimes wonder if we don't give these people enough credit, because I think the reason that they're terrified of right-wing terrorism is, I think, because they fear it will be more effective than leftist or Islamic terrorism. Leftists go and, you know, they start a riot, they beat the crap out of some people in the streets, they smash up a Starbucks. Islamists, they'll blow up a bus, run some people over on the bridge, and it's all very terrible. But it's not exactly the type of stuff that immediately shifts the balance of political power. I think that what they're really worried about is that as soon as right-wingers get it in their head that they could use violence, like, we think further ahead than them, and we would do it in such a fashion as to actually change the course of history, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You think about, for example, like this James Hodgkinson's guy. This guy, if he had trained with his rifle, he would have changed the course of history, right? Mm. If he had understood combat as well as he understood the ideological underlyings of the Republican Party, then he would have killed the Freedom Caucus and changed history. If right-wingers were to go out on something like that, well, we've got a lot of, like, police and veterans and military people and a lot of firearms here in the United States anyway. And we would be a more effective fighting machine. And so I understand why they would fear the idea that right-wingers would even get up and yell scares the life out of them, because if we resort to violence, we will in one fell swoop change the political landscape.
Right, as if saying, well, you know, the leftists have started these fight clubs now, right? You see, they had the gun training, and they were going on trying to, you know, learn how to beat people up. I mean, usually what they do, of course, is that they gang up on 10 on 1, 50 on 1, 20 on 2, you know, whatever they might do. Very dishonorable way of fighting, of course, but they don't care. I mean, to them, it is war. I mean, to them, this is for real. They're not fucking around here. They see us as a violent and dangerous enough enemy that they will try to get rid of us. And of course, what's funny about this dynamic is that in that moment when they take that step, they become the aggressor. They try to claim that, well, we're doing this because we're just defending ourselves against some fascist takeover of the government or something like that, right? But if we haven't initiated the violence and they do, we are effectively, we are in their place. And we are saying, actually, no, at this point, now it's us who are defending ourselves, right? I mean, they're not de-escalating the situation. It's just getting worse and worse.
Well, everything a leftist does is projection, right? You know, I know that there's I know a lot of people like to joke about DR3, Democrats are the real racists, and kind of make fun of this.
Yeah.
But it became a meme for a reason, right? They call everybody a racist, everybody a sexist, and meanwhile, every thought that goes through their head is processed through the lenses of race and gender, right? They call us violent terrorists when they are the ones in black masks smashing the windows of Starbucks. And they are just defending their country while they are in fact trying to perpetrate a revolution against it. And so everything they say, it seems, is just about the exact opposite of the truth.
Yeah, it's backwards. That's just it. That's a good observation. I totally agree with that. I think that there's something very pernicious going on at this point. It's something very, very dangerous because it's ramping up. But hey, I mean, what are you going to do? Things have changed politically drastically in the past. If we look at it from a historical point of view, when the different new ideologies came onto the stage and the scene, millions of people in some cases were killed and murdered. I don't think we're at a point where that somehow is going to stop. I mean, it's just, this is kind of what it has been like for different groups and territories and peoples and ideologies. I mean, there's nothing weird about that, is it? It's natural.
Well, it's natural for there to be a degree of conflict in a given society, and you start mixing societies and having different cultures come into clashes with one another about, you know, violent collisions between them is about the most natural thing I could imagine. Sure. You know, I had a piece up here and I was trying to find exactly the paragraph. Unqualified reservations. Menzies Smallbug. He was talking about this attack in Norway, the Breivik guy, right? And he says, terrorism is anarchism, a shattering of order. Is there any such thing as a right-wing anarchism? Of course not. The concept is retarded. If the word right means anything, its goal is not to shatter order, but to impose it, right?
Right.
And so, like, I think that's why they're afraid of, you know, right-wing terrorism, so to speak. It's like, okay, you could have right-wing private sector violence or something to that effect, but the idea would not be this crazy disrupting of order. It would be to impose order. It would be to restore order within the society. It's almost like, shall we say, seeking higher authority, right?
Yeah.
I worry about a scenario where, let's just say, for example, let's say the Democrats managed to gain the House of Representatives and the U.S. Senate in 2018 and 2020, but Donald Trump remains president in 2020. Like, the Democrats would impeach Donald Trump and prosecute him for treason, even if there was no evidence of it, just because they had the numeric power to do so.
Right.
And so, like, in that scenario, I could see people coming to the defense of President Trump, right, saying, okay, you know, whatever it is, we're going to act against the orders of the federal government in order to save the president. And, you know, you could see a number of people acting in one fell swoop to change the political landscape in that fashion. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you think that that's what they're going to try to do? I mean, I think it's, in terms of Breivik, it was interesting because supposedly he had an idea that he wanted also to radicalize people. He wanted to begin the first step in a process that he saw as inevitable, so that if he took that step, the counter response from the left would be so aggressive and so, not maybe violent, but it would be so hostile to those who are on the right that in itself will kind of issue another layer to the response, right? So it's this escalation process. And to a certain extent, I mean, if you just step back for one moment and see it somewhat objectively, we of course understand, Chris, that both sides can benefit from this situation to try to gain political ground, right?
Yeah, certainly. And you know, the The thing I see about that sort of thing, I mean, you know, it's going to go waste a bunch of kids doesn't sound like the best idea in the world. But, you know, like take for example, there was recently this Julius Caesar play that depicted the assassination of President Donald Trump. And some people went and they go and they disrupt this play. And, you know, was this necessarily the best way to, you know, bring people's attention to the fact that they're normalizing violence against the right? You know, there you can make the argument that it's not. But I appreciated it because it just says to the rest of the world, like, hey, the people that you're screwing with have just about had it, you know? Go out and, like, let them know what that is in whatever way it is, right?
Yeah.
And if a bunch of children don't end up dead in the process, it's probably going to be more appetizing for the rest of the populace, right?
Yeah.
But whatever it is, there has to be, like, if people who are trying to victimize you will not stop if they don't have to, right? They have to understand that there's a hard physical limit to how much they can get away with, or they will continue until they have, you know, killed the goose that lays the golden eggs or whatever. They won't stop unless they realize that there's a threat to their safety involved.
Right, right. Would this ever have happened with, let's say, Obama? I know that supposedly there was the same production theater company, whatever, had done something with a character. It was kind of Obama-like, but that was kind of, I don't know, that was disputable, to be honest. They would never do that with Obama or with Hillary Clinton, I think. And if they did, I mean, imagine the outrage, right? They have, the violence against Trump has obviously been incentivized by the media, and they're underlying this, and they're saying, you know what, it's okay, no, don't worry about it, right?
Well, precisely. They are absolutely. I have heard the same thing that they had. You know, it resembled Obama in a previous rendition of the play. Okay. Well, it didn't have any attention drawn to it at the time. Now it did, right? So the attention is being drawn to it, and now the attention needs to be made in an environment. And even if they and when they did that to Barack Obama, there was nobody on the right normalizing violence against the left.
Right.
There was no assassinate Barack Obama Facebook page allowed to exist, right? And there was several of those for Donald Trump, right?
Yeah.
We've seen pages advocating the assassination of Donald Trump get reported to Facebook, and Facebook come and tell the reporter that it's not against their terms of service.
Yeah, that's free speech. No problem.
Exactly. Yep. They have free speech, but, you know, if I express skepticism about other ethnicities taking over my government, well, then I'm a racist and I have to be banned for 30 days, right?
Yeah, that's right.
It's done it purposely. And so the fact that they act disproportionately to us requires us to escalate, right? We have to respond in kind if we want to, or not in kind even, we have to respond more forcefully. I mean, to overtake an opponent in a violent conflict, you have to present more force than your opponent is capable of resisting.
Well, you see, exactly. But so far, you know, the conservative people and, you know, people more on the right or whatever, they've been backing up and backing up and backing up and leaving room and saying, yes, okay, free speech. And of course, your opinions have to be heard. And yes, of course, you can do this. And we don't want to be censoring anybody, yada, yada. But at some point, you're backed up against the wall, and there's nowhere else you can turn. You have to charge at that point. You have to set your foot down, because that's how they've taken over our culture. It's enough conservative people who have just backed away. They haven't had any principles. They haven't put their foot down and say, you know what, this is here but no further. That's it. And that's basically what's happening right now. And the left cannot take that. They're peeing their pants because for the first time they're actually speaking up against it and fighting back. Right.
Well, exactly. They are in a panic. And the reason that they go crazier for Trump than anybody else is, I mean, he's governed as a moderate on basically everything except immigration. And now in even immigration, he says, you know, we got 0 miles of wall bill. What they're terrified of is that he's going to take care of the demographic problem. Right. They have relied on us dealing with them in terms of civil discourse, and they are trying to they are relying on us to use as our only tactic convincing people of our ideas. Meanwhile, they are doing everything else: killing people, threatening violence, importing non-whites in order to change the political demographics, and everything they have done is to skirt around making an argument or winning an argument. Everything that they do is around that, and we're just sitting there trying to talk to them. And if they realize that, we realize that, and we start acting on the same terms, then we're not just going to win. There's going to be, there's going to be some physical removal going on.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, maybe it's about time, huh? I don't know if there's any way of working with these people, because it would have been okay, take the libertarian position, like, let's leave these groups to be on their own, right? They can be there, we can be here, they can live how they want, they can freedom of association, all that good stuff. I'm all for that, right? But at a certain point, you realize that the left's very mission is to make sure that we cannot freely associate. We can't have our own region. Their basic interest is to make sure that we are suppressed and that we cannot live the way we want to. That's just what they do. How do you work with that? You can't. You can't agree with people like that.
Exactly. And, this is why, you mentioned at the beginning of it that I went from a little more libertarian to a little more alt-right, And the thing has been with me that, yes, I like this idea of, all right, leave everybody to their own devices. Let's reduce to the extent possible the amount of violence and coercion in the world, because that seems like a noble, righteous thing for us to do. The problem that I realized after a while was even with the libertarian movement at large, which I want to be careful to differentiate from the actual libertarian philosophy, but the libertarian movement at large has largely been taken over by communists as well. And so they promote all this hyper-inclusive nonsense and dedicate almost no effort to removing things like anti-discrimination laws. They dedicate almost no effort to reducing taxes. They place almost no effort on, limiting the interference of government and private property. All they want to do is open up the commons to all manner of degeneracy and inviting in third worlders into white countries. And so they're displayed. Their revealed preference is different than their stated preference, and so you can't negotiate with them either. You can't work with them in an honest fashion because they are working against your interests.
Yeah, I think they've realized the left, that is, the cultural Marxists, all those factions have realized that at some point they couldn't count on people to perform the permanent revolution, right? They basically, even the working class in the First, Second World War, they didn't unite with each other, not fight, etc. They favored the nation. At some point they realized that these goddamn white people you can't trust them. So therefore, let's invite the third world and try to create a Marxist revolution in that way and kind of use the horde against them to finally push them out of the picture. I really think that they think that they're going to be in charge with some utopian, utilitarian system where, there's kind of like a dumbed-down grunt person or something like that, that they can just kind of move around on the chessboard however they see fit, and they see that white people is an obstacle and a problem for them to get to that point.
Yeah, I mean, that certainly seems to be the narrative by which they operate, but that also... I am tempted to say they're too smart to believe that in reality, right? It seems to me like they verbally talk as if we are all these interchangeable cogs in a machine. But I don't think that at least not the people who are driving the narratives, the media moguls and the high political strategists. I can't believe for a second that they actually believe that. What occurs to me is that. Yeah, you ever look at RK selection theory by anonymous mm-hmm. conservative?
Yeah, sure do.
I went through that, and part of what he discusses in there is that the R's of the society will betray the society so that the K's will have to fight with foreign K's, right?
Yeah,
and it creates better mating opportunity for the R's. So they import. These people who have been so hostile towards Christianity in our societies, acting like this is the most hateful thing ever, now think that Islam is totally awesome and want to completely ignore all of the practices of that particular faith as they import millions of Muslims into the United States and Europe. Now, like, what possible strategy could that be towards peace? This is not a misguided effort to help the less fortunate. At some point, you have to accept they're doing this on purpose because they know that we will fight with them, and they will stand back and say, "You're all so terrible for fighting."
Yeah,
and it provides them with an opportunity to steal, to seize power, to operate in the chaos, to rule over the ashes, to have different mating opportunities when all the men die in the war. Whatever you want to sum it up as. I am not convinced that they believe the things they tell us. It almost seems like it seems like too many people acting together at once to keep the lie together at some times, but at the same time, like we just said at the beginning of the thing, with Van Jones and the Nothing Burger comment and the other producer at CNN saying it's BS. Everybody knows that they're all still doing it, and it's just every once in a while you get a peek.
Yeah, exactly. They just slip up, but then they continue, of course, as usual. They just try to cover it up. Look more confident than ever. Let's just not talk about it. But one of the things you mentioned is interesting. I've been thinking about this too, right? What is this unholy alliance about, and how do they see this? How can they use this? Because I'm with you on that. I think that they are playing 3, 4, 5 steps ahead. Most people are unfortunately just reacting to it. They're just very, they're reactionary in that sense. Nothing wrong with that. We have to react, but I think it's wiser to respond as opposed to react if you want to get into semantics. But what I think they're doing, Chris, is I think that they have come to a point where they realize that out of the terrorism that's created from the forceful movement of populations, first, of course, invasion of Middle Eastern and North African countries, etc., then, of course, taking those very people, moving them to the countries that did the invasion to begin with, right? Or at least they tell us so. They tell us that Britain is responsible, France is responsible, U.S. obviously. Even Sweden has had troops in Afghanistan. Therefore, we kind of deserve the mass rapes and the just complete chimp outs that they're doing on the streets of Malmo, you know. But I think what they also are trying to do is to create a shared experience on an emotional level. Because when you see that these terrorist acts happen, they go into a situation where they not only accept them and say, you know, we will not be afraid. This is tolerance. We're gonna embrace it. We're gonna open our borders even more, right? We're gonna show how loving we are and all that kind of stuff. But I think for people on the street, it literally creates an opportunity for them to actually connect emotionally with people who are living next to them that they might not even speak the same language as, right? In this multicultural, disassociated society, we're so different, we're so compartmentalized and so broken up and living our own little sectors. However, the thing that is uniting people to a certain extent, and I hate to admit it, but this could be a clever move by the globalists, is that when the terrorism occurs, people do actually come together in a joined experience, which is not only traumatizing, but it's also to a point where that's something that they're going to have together. Because think about it, there's no other way that you can merge these cultures and have these people connect with each other. Only brutal violence is going to achieve that, I think. What do you think?
I think you're accurate, and I think that what terrorism creates is a willingness amongst the populace to defer to state authorities, right? They say, okay, there's been this horrific thing. This is the job of the government, and the government demands our cooperation in this way to prevent it from happening. And so I, as a good member of the society, will defer to the state. Meanwhile, the state policy, in fact, created this problem. And so you have this conflict, right? And it doesn't seem to, it creates a complex situation, I would say.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So there's a lot of layers to this, obviously, Chris, you know, in terms of how we kind of try to understand the obstacles that we're faced with to try to kind of break it down. But, you know, a while ago, obviously, I came to a point where I also realized that, you know, collectivism is not a bad thing. Most of the groups we have working against us are operating on a collective basis and a collective level. We are hyper-individualized in the West, even to such a point where we're so atomized. We don't have the group. We don't have the tribe. We don't have the bigger, you know, maybe like people get that at, I don't know, sport events or something, maybe some kind of concerts or something, or some specific band that white people kind of unite over. But for most other races and groups, it's most of it is on a very base level. It's on the racial level. But for white people, it's like, you know, no, we're Trekkies, we're furries, we're, you know, we're into this band. And that's the only issues we unite over. We don't unite over the fact that we're white. But frankly, in terms of collectivism anyway, just I want to get your take on that. I don't think there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing horrible about that. I frankly don't even care about semantics or what you call a system that we have. As long as the system is there to make sure that it's doing what's best for the people itself, I don't care what kind of system it is. I'm not, you know, how can we operate against collective groups as individuals? It's impossible.
Right. So I think that a lot of the people who act, as you said it, hyper-individualistically, at some point they cease to be individualistic at all, because really what they're doing is, like, if you're trying to be an individualist and as a result of being individualist, you're not seeing race Well, now you're not even able, if you're not able to tell the difference between groups of people, how are you supposed to tell the difference between individuals? What you're really doing is when you're being hyper-individualistic, you're saying all of mankind is one unit, right?
Yeah.
And you're actually over-collectivizing at some point. And so, you know, the fact that, like I've said before about individual interests, it's not in my individual best interest for my race to go extinct, right? And so,
yeah.
We are sadly propagandized to think otherwise. But you could easily propagandize in the other direction, right? Saying, hey, hi there, individualist. You know all those values that you hold dear? They're basically the definition of Western civilization, which is a synonym for white man stuff. So perhaps you want to prevent that from ceasing to exist.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. No, but, I mean, we got to be smart about this, and we can't let ourselves be, I don't know, bamboozled into this position where we just fool and go along with it because it sounds good. Yeah, I was listening to Alex Jones today, kind of case in point, you know, and he keeps returning to these values. I listen now and then. It's kind of fun in an entertaining kind of way. And obviously some of the stuff he says is pretty good and on point. But he always kind of returns to those things where he refused to take his own side, right? He always goes back to, you know, red, white, and blue, and we're all Americans as long as, you know, we bleed red and all this stuff. And I was realizing today it's just like a, he's taking the road of like some holy, it sounds, you know, to many people, it probably sounds good because they've been programmed for years about, you know, Hollywood morality and, you know, we're all the same and, you know, elephants bleed red too. So why don't we join with them then or whatever? It doesn't matter. I mean, the point is he's refusing to get to a point where he states that he's taking the own side of his people. And that's first, because I think we're going to get to a point, Chris, where other people are going to do the deciding for them. It doesn't matter if he wants to or not. They're going to organize against him just for the fact that he is a white guy, and that'll be enough basis for them to hate him on that basis. But he still will not take that last step, as so many of these alt-light cucks won't do. Frustrating.
Yes, it is frustrating. I have a degree of sympathy for the alt-light guys, and it is simply that, look, as a result, when I started getting into racial stuff, I did it by accident, right? Like I stumbled upon this information and I do an open phones show and I basically destroyed my career talking about things. Okay. I'm good at what I do. And if I wanted to keep my mouth shut about certain subjects, I'd make a lot more money. So I have a lot of sympathy for people who will avoid racial topics for the sake of staying in business and reaching more people. That said, the thing that drives me crazy is when they punch right, when they come after us, when you have the situation like you had down there in Houston, where the Oath Keepers had some guy who was apparently an illegal immigrant at some point put his hands on a nationalist, right? Those types of situations are completely unacceptable. Just like we just had down there in Washington D.C. that we were all going to put on this event together, and then the alt-like guys cucked out because they heard Spencer was coming, and you know we ended up having a bigger rally anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, I read a piece on my show the other day by a blog called Northern Reaction describing the never punch right thing. And I think that these guys would do well to learn that. If you would stop calling other people racist and you'd stop calling other people names and trying to, you know, denigrate us for the work that we're doing, I could see us leading the alt-light to be the more acceptable mainstream version of introducing people to a set of ideas. I could see that. But when they come after us, you know, we got to take the gloves off.
Yeah, yeah, it's unfortunate. I don't think that should be our primary goal, of course, fighting with these guys, but we got to fight back. I think that they're seeking to get them into a position where they are just the new the new establishment, the new, you know, approved. We could talk more about this in the second segment, but I can't help to feel that even some people in the mainstream have gone to mention some of those people as opposed to those who are behind the real alt-right, if you will, just because of the fact that it drives people into that acceptable opposition, right? The, if you will, the kosher-marked opposition, right?
Yeah, what you have is frankly an effort to keep people from hearing anything about Jewish people, right? Anybody who's they do not want anybody who talks about Jewish influence to be heard, and so they'd much rather say, "Hey, here's Mike Cernovich to tell you what the alt right is all about."
Yeah, and they're trying to do it as it's a completely irrational, out of the blue, crazy idea to talk about like organized groups that actively are like on their About Us pages talking about how they're working against, you know, us, and yeah, and they're getting millions of dollars. They're everywhere. They have their fingers in every single pie. Israel receives millions and millions each year, defense contracts, intelligence contracts. I mean, it's like, it's there, and then they're trying to act like we're kooky for pointing it out when they go, and they go to these straw man arguments where they can take some crazy person who's just obsessed with the issue and not talks about anything else, which of course is kind of, you know, completely going overboard with it. I think there's a balanced and objectively sound way that you can talk about this stuff, which doesn't, you know, take you off the rails. But they reach for those straw men in a way because it makes them more comfortable in their position. You know what? Those are just crazy people. Don't worry about that. Not understanding there's a whole truth, you know, aspect to this, which they're just denying or actively being gatekeepers for. I don't know.
Well, precisely. And I mean, it seems to me that, like, there's... gatekeepers is probably a good word for it, right? Because they're just trying to keep it from getting to a certain point. And the other thing that they can do with it is that, certain issues that we face today, if you don't address the racial component of them, then it doesn't make any sense. And so if somebody doesn't want to address racial issues, then they will get them onto a stage with somebody who wants to discuss race from the left, and that person will be completely disarmed. And so it puts them in a position where they just have no defense against the case being made against them or the point being made, if you can even call it a point. They just have nothing that they can say in response because they are forbidden in some way from using a category of information in any point that they're going to make, and that puts them at a tactical disadvantage.
That is correct, Chris. I want to talk more about your Bilderberg activities afterwards. It was great. I wanted to hear about some of the support for that, if people liked what you were talking about or whatever. But before we do that, let's take a short break. I just want to make sure that we plug, of course, Radical Agenda. We have the Charlottesville event coming up. We'll be live streaming that, folks. You can tune in to Red Eyes TV to watch the whole thing. It'll be great. I know you're there. You're going to be speaking. But tell us a bit about the website and what else you have got going on there, Chris.
Well, Radical Agenda, I do it Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time live. You can catch it on Ustream or TuneIn. I'm currently banned from streaming live to YouTube because of their very vague hate speech rules. So for the foreseeable future YouTube audience, you guys are only going to see clips of the show. But you can always get full episodes of Radical Agenda through the RSS feeds at radicalagenda.com and ChristopherCanwell.com. And the way that I've managed to make money from this now, since it's very difficult to sell advertising on it, is I sell, in addition to affiliate marketing and selling and soliciting donations, I sell premium memberships at ChristopherCanwell.com/join. It gets you access to, I walk around with a little personal recorder, and I take notes and I rant about subjects and put these things behind the paywall for people who want to get a little behind-the-scenes look at what's going on with me. And we have a lot of fun there, so I'd encourage you to check it out at ChristopherCanwell.com/join.
Awesome. We'll have the links up to that, of course, both websites. Do check it out, folks. Much more of Chris there, of course. But, yeah, we'll take just a short break here, ladies and gentlemen. And, of course, we have the same setup here at Red Ice. We do have membership. That's the way we can continue to fund the operation, continue to grow. You know that we've stepped up the game lately, more video material, more reports, more segments. And as Chris say, and this is true, we really cannot do this without your participation and your help. We don't have advertisers. We don't have sponsors. We don't have, you know, big companies getting in on this and trying to, you know, help us out in that regard. We're doing this from the ground up, true grassroots ourselves. And so it's super important that you're there and helping us out, making sure that people like ourselves and Chris can, of course, continue. So it is really up to you guys. So if you want to check out the second segment here coming up, go to redicemembers.com. Sign up for a membership with us. It's only €6 per month. And you can sign up from 3 months up to 2 years. We have different ones. One-time payments or a three-month recurring option as well. So thank you so much for your support and for your help. We'll take a short break. We'll be right back. Thank you for watching.